from London, BBC Caribbean Report. A very happy new year to everyone, and welcome to the last of our special editions this holiday season. Today we speak with Trinidadian-born Trevor MacDonald, diplomatic editor and top news presenter with Britain's independent television news, ITN.
Rather sadly, I feel that exports from the Caribbean are being sidelined by all sorts of institutions and organizations. And I think that the Caribbean really has to keep fighting for its voice to be heard.
More from Trevor MacDonald in just a moment. I'm Hugh Crosskill, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Trevor MacDonald was born and educated in Trinidad and Tobago. It was there that he made his first entry into journalism. He wrote for newspapers, presented a wide variety of programs on radio, and was in at the start of television broadcasting in Trinidad in 1962. In 1969, Trevor MacDonald travelled to England to join the BBC's Caribbean service, forerunner to the one we now work for. In 1973, he joined ITN as a general reporter. Determined not to be a token black face, Trevor insisted that he be given tough assignments. And, as he told me, it was one such assignment in particular that represented the platform upon which his now considerable reputation was built.
When I joined, I insisted on being sent to all the hot places and all the big stories of the day. And one of the biggest, I think, then, it's not very far from being one now, was Northern Ireland. And I did several months in Northern Ireland when it was really bad, when people were being blown up and killed every day, when the hotel we stayed in was being bombed. I think it was bombed 20 times or something, half a dozen times of which I was there. So that I think that was the story which was commanding a lot of national attention. And I would imagine, I mean, I really haven't seriously thought about the turning point, as your question implies. I would have thought that maybe that brought one's work to a certain public attention. And it must have been very odd to see a West Indian, a black West Indian, in the streets of Belfast. A lot of my friends, you know, wondered what I was doing there. And they rather seriously thought that ITN, having hired a black reporter, was sending him out to get killed almost immediately. In fact, it was on my insistence that I went there, and probably that had a little to do with some public recognition of what I was doing. The thing that you discover coming to England is that people are driven more into specialised areas. I did some of everything. I did sport, I did the news, I did special events. I played music, I was a kind of disc jockey, probably a very bad one. Mm-hmm. But one dabbled in all these things, which was a really excellent training for coming here. I was determined not to become the sort of token black reporter. This was a great problem, really, because I was the only black television reporter. And there were a lot of people who thought, well, maybe in the enlightened times, they want a black reporter. Now, that didn't bother me too much. That sort of perception was, you know, it didn't worry me at all, really. But I was determined to make sure that I did the job on merit.
A lot of water has flowed under the bridge since then, and many important stories you've covered along the way. But most recently, you had an exclusive interview with Saddam Hussein. You went across to Baghdad to do the interview. We've heard the rhetoric, an imitation of Hitler, the butcher of Baghdad, an evil man. You sat there with him face to face, eyeball to eyeball. What was your impression of Saddam Hussein?
I spent 3 hours with him. It's rather difficult in only such a short time to come to any complete impression of the man. The other thing which I must say before I answer your question directly is that Baghdad is a very closed place. It's very psychologically difficult to get into the place. It's very psychologically tiring. But given all those things, I thought he was a very good interlocutor. I thought he was very sharp. He was very bright. I got no impression of any sort of insanity. I also thought that he recognized that probably the Iraqis have bitten off a little more than they can chew. I think that he was really desperately concerned about the fact that right across the border on his southern flank were 500,000 multinational troops waiting, in the common parlance, to zap Baghdad. I think this has focused the mind of the Iraqis very well. And they were desperately trying, it seems to me, to try to find some way to get themselves out of a predicament into which they had landed themselves. And it's still my belief that that is possible. I don't go as far as Edward Heath in believing that the whole thing, the whole Western policy is wrong. Mm. But I think it's probably a little short-sighted to think that the Iraqis aren't quite sensibly appreciative of the difficulties that they now face. And will try to do everything to avoid being eliminated, because they must surely know that there is not very much of a chance of their winning. He was terribly interested in the Western view of what he was doing, was very surprised at some of the strength of Western feeling against him. And he the other impression I got was that he was dead against the former Kuwaiti regime, the Kuwaiti government. He felt that they were a bunch of no-goods who had squandered their country's wealth, not in the interest of their people, but in the interest of themselves. Of course, that view is very seriously challenged by the Kuwaitis mm-hmm. themselves, and perhaps quite rightly so.
Another interview, a big one, I would imagine, from your point of view, was the one you did with Nelson Mandela.